What's surprising is that about 1% of these meteors hit us faster than 225,000 miles an hour. This is far too fast for them to be orbiting our sun. It's so fast that these meteors must have dipped in from outside our solar system. Where do they come from? Some are probably expelled from nearby star systems, pushed by the radiation of these alien suns. Also, as our sun orbits the galactic center, it may sweep through areas of interstellar dustiness. The biggest shock are the rare meteors clocked at almost 700,000 miles an hour. These are flying so fast, they must come from outside our galaxy itself. This moment of science comes from Indiana University, with production support from the Brabson Foundation. Today's program was prepared by Eric Sonstrom, with help from Martin Burkhead in astronomy. I'm Don Glass.
It's 2:41 in sports. The Cubs' Giovanni Soto, the 2008 NL Rookie of the Year, is going on the 15-day disabled list with a strained left oblique muscle. Manager Lou Piniella said Soto could be out for a month. The Cubs and the Cardinals are playing a four-game series at Wrigley Field, where they opened the four-game series at Wrigley Field this afternoon. In the bottom of the second, the score, St. Louis 1, the Cubs zip. The Chicago White Sox start a road series with division rival Minnesota tonight. John Danks, who's been one of the hottest pitchers in the American League lately, will start for the Sox. Twins starter Nick Blackburn is also after his eighth win of the season. Minnesota was just swept by the New York Yankees in a three-game home series. Olympian Michael Phelps continues to make a splash at the U.S. National Swimming Championships in Indianapolis. Yesterday, he broke the world record in the 100-meter butterfly to qualify for his third event at the upcoming World Championships in Rome. Phil Mickelson has decided not to play the British Open next week so he can be with his wife, Amy, as she starts her recovery from breast cancer. Mickelson said last month at the U.S. Open that it was highly unlikely he would play at Turnberry for the British Open. He says on his website today, family comes first. And Brian Vickers won the pole yesterday for tomorrow night's NASCAR race at Chicagoland Speedway. It is his fifth pole of the season. Red Bull Racing's teammate Scott Speed qualified second for the race. That's sports.
Programs on WILL AM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to explore the newly announced 2009-2010 season. Tickets are on sale Thursday, July 16th at 10 a.m. More information is available online at krannertcenter.com.
Farmers in the Northeast are having a tough time, a bad time, with all of the wet weather this spring and summer. And now they're facing another big threat. It's called late blight. This is the disease that led to the Irish potato famine. Maine Public Radio's Susan Sharon reports.
At the Goranson Organic Vegetable Farm in Dresden, Maine, even the pigs are tired of the rain. The sunflowers are drooping. And farmer Rob Johansson is worried about late blight. The disease is characterized by water-soaked, greasy lesions on plant leaves. And it's been discovered in a greenhouse about 6 miles away.
The spores are in the air, and this is the perfect weather for the spores to germinate.
Spores from plants infected with late blight can travel through the air for miles. They love wet weather and feast on tomatoes and potatoes. Johansson grows both. He says together they make up a third of his farm income. Jim Dill of the Maine Cooperative Extension Service says there's good reason for Johansson and other farmers to be on guard.
If left untreated, it can take a whole potato field down in, 3 to 5 days.
Dill says conventional farmers can use protective fungicides to try to prevent the disease. Organic farmers like Johansson can apply a copper solution to try to ward it off. Johansson has his sprayer hitched to his new tractor ready to go. He's just waiting for the ground to dry. Normally, he would only spray a few times a season. Because of late blight, he'll do it every 5 days until the end of October, spending about $400 on each application. Dill says home gardeners should also inspect their plants and get rid of the infected ones.
Take out the diseased plants and then take out, a little section around it and destroy it. Do not compost those plants because composting won't necessarily kill it in time.
Late blight has been identified in states along the East Coast and including Ohio and West Virginia. The problem has been compounded by the sale of some infected tomato seedlings sold at Walmart, Home Depot, and other big box stores. The major supplier of tomato plants to those stores doesn't think his company is solely responsible for the outbreak. But Dennis Thomas of Alabama-based Bonnie Plants says Bonnie has pulled its remaining product from store shelves.
It costs us quite a lot of money, but if this disease is there and it likes tomato plants, then we thought that the safe thing to do was to go on and just get them out.
So far, farmer Rob Johansson's fields have a clean bill of health, but he says he'll be worrying and watching until the first frost. For NPR News, I'm Susan Sharon.
California's Central Valley is known as the nation's breadbasket. You may eat something today that was grown there. Yet in that valley, unemployment is among the worst in the nation. Even before the recession, the valley was a place of poverty and malnutrition. Today, NPR's Hidden Kitchen series goes into the Central Valley's agricultural heart. In the region that produces so many of our vegetables and fruits, rates of juvenile obesity and type 2 diabetes are close to the country's highest. The Kitchen Sisters, producers Nikki Silva, and Davia Nelson call their story the Breadbasket Blues.
My name is Isena Ayala. I'm 20 years old. I was raised here in Kettleman City, population of 2,500. Kettleman was real rich for its oil. Its oil wells was going to bring a lot of people out here, but it never happened. We are a rural community surrounded by fields and crops. We don't have grocery stores, which is very hard. We have to drive 35 miles in order to get to our nearest grocery store. Up there, we have Carl's Jr. We have In-N-Out Burger. This place is always packed. Next door, we have a McDonald's. Most of the youth in Kettleman, they work out here in the fast food restaurants. When I was in high school, I worked at Taco Bell. When I was working there, I was overweight. We would get our break, then we would just go eat out to Jack in the Box. You see them before they start working in a fast food restaurant, how slim, and then you see them working up there, and it's like, oh, what happened to her?
The Central Valley has been described as sort of the new Appalachia. These are the poorest congressional districts with some of the worst health disparities in California. I'm Genoveva Islas Hooker, Central California Regional Obesity Prevention Program. Our focus is to look at obesity from an environmental and policy standpoint. Poor communities do not have the infrastructure that supports active lifestyle. We don't have sidewalks, we don't have streetlights. There's packs of dogs. They don't walk because there's nobody in their community that gets the loose dogs. We don't have access to stores, to healthy produce. We've created this very obesogenic environment, and we question why so many people are overweight and at risk for type 2 diabetes. Well, we've engineered it.
Here we're living in a region that produces the finest fruits and vegetables in the world, and yet the children of this valley rarely taste those fruits and vegetables. My name is Mark Arax. I grew up in Fresno. I came back here as a writer for the Los Angeles Times. My grandfather, when he came here in 1920 from Armenia, he became a migrant fruit picker. We have created here the most intensive farm belt the world has ever known. Agriculture done at a speed and intensity that's never been done by man. And yet, right next to that agriculture is this stunning poverty. The neighborhoods in Fresno have the most concentrated poverty of any city in the country. New Orleans was second in this last survey. And all that pathology that goes along with poverty, you know, drugs, and we produce more meth and more milk than any region in the country.
In the Central Valley, the healthy food that's picked is shipped out and then shipped back in to be sold in our grocery stores. In Fresno, we discovered there was actually a zoning ordinance that prohibited the establishment of farmers markets. We had to work at creating a new zoning ordinance that would allow farmers markets in the last year.
These are the hills. You can see it's just like a desert. Rattlesnakes. If you go walking out there, you'll see mostly older people that have diabetes, where the doctors told them to go walk. Because even though people would want to walk in town, it's very hard with having no sidewalks. You'll see people walking with a stick just in case of a dog. We do have that dog problem here in Kettleman.
brown pit, appearing to be aggressive, sparks and growls.
This is the SPCA Animal Shelter. All lines are busy at this time.
In Fresno County, we have probably one of the biggest dog bite areas. I'm Beth Caffrey with the Central California SPCA. We started working with Fresno County Healthy Neighborhoods Program, finding out why people don't exercise as much, why they don't go outside. There's a lot of stray dogs and animal packs that make people nervous about going out into their own neighborhood. A lot of people get animals because there's so much theft. Sometimes they want to have the toughest dog. It's typically tied to gangs and fighting your dogs.
There is a large amount of gang activity here in Central California.
My name is Keith Padgett, SPCA, Fresno, California.
The most prevalent is the bulldogs. Gang members have taken our Fresno State mascot as their symbol.
Gang food, I would describe it as munchy food. If you're smoking marijuana, you might want some chips and sodas. I don't think they're eating their five fruits and vegetables a day, unfortunately. The young boy in Arosi, on his way to get some milk at a convenience store, was shot. Gang culture has been affecting the food environment. It's made it inhospitable just to walk to go to get some milk. When community members are telling us, you know, I don't want my children out, I drive them to school even though it's two blocks away, it's for some very real issues.
My name is Maria Peña, the Greenfield Walking Club in Bakersfield. We started 3 years ago. We're trying to teach each other how to eat healthy, exercise.
These women wanted to form a walking group in Bakersfield. There was a park, but there was gang activity happening there, loose dogs, syringes. They began to talk with the city council members. Lights got repaired. Graffiti got removed. These women raised money to establish a walking path around the park. In Lindsay, a small rural community, they have Friday night markets. There's food, activities for kids, dance, music, produce vendors. They've had a reduction in crime.
Friday nights, families are here, the husbands, their kids, and they're dancing, they're eating. Any other day, there's nobody around town.
As long as people are indoors because of their fear, they won't come out. If we created more forums where neighbors could meet each other, days in the park, farmers markets, community gardens, environments that promote a healthier lifestyle, there's real power when the community members themselves advocate for these changes.
The Bread Basket Blues was produced by Nikki Silva and Davia Nelson, the Kitchen Sisters. It's 2:53. You thought that getting on Facebook would get you hip and trendy. Well, turns out the internet and social networking site is showing signs of aging. A study shows that more than a quarter of the Facebook users are between the ages of 35 and 54. NPR's Margot Adler recently joined the site and shares her experience as a member of the older demographic.
I confess I've become overly involved with Facebook. I've done the obvious things, connected with old friends, engaged in fun, and sometimes even deep discussions after putting up a status report. I ignore the groups, the events, the gifts, the apps, and the 1,300 people I haven't friended because they didn't leave a relevant message. But a few months ago, I got an odd request. Would I join this group, women who have removed their birth year from Facebook? My first reaction was, why? I'm 63, and I've always believed in being honest about my age. I love the fact that I'm old enough to have done civil rights work in Mississippi and to have covered the Pentagon Papers trial. I'm married, I'm not looking for a job, so why hide my age? But then I noticed, as I thought about it, that all the Facebook ads on my page were about wrinkle creams and diets. Whoever was advertising had focused on my age and on nothing else revealed in my profile. For example, a love of science fiction or birding. To them, I was just a fat, walking wrinkle waiting to be fixed. So I wrote a message to the woman who started the group. It turns out her name is Christine Solosky. She's 52 and she lives near Toronto. I asked her why the group. She says one afternoon she noticed the ads. They were unrelenting.
They were for, anti-wrinkle, look younger than what you are, and, you know, how do the stars do it, this type of thing. I find them annoying. I guess you could say there was no balance.
And what was the result when she took her birth year out?
There was an obvious decrease in the number of those types of ads. Now the ads were geared more towards keywords in my profile and obviously based on my interests.
I decided not to join the group. I still like my age and I'm pretty good at being oblivious to messages imploring me to shape up. But recently I started looking again and I noticed no ads for diets or wrinkle cream. Turns out you now can vote ads on Facebook up or down and even vote them out. I'm guessing a lot of people voted against those ads for wrinkle cream.
Margo Adler is one of our correspondents based in New York.
And that was Steve Inskeep. How about that? It's 2:56. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Coming up on The World at 3 from PRI, in 1993, a political crisis led to deadly street fighting in Moscow. An American reporter was shot in the chest. He recently returned to Moscow and found a soldier who might have fired the bullet, revisiting the chaos of Russia's constitutional crisis. That story in the day's news coming up today on The World at 3 o'clock.
Earth and Sky.
In early 2009, the United...
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
Sorry to say, no Earth and Sky today. We're having those technical difficulties. So we've had a number of little difficulties this afternoon, but we're well on our way to The World, which is coming up next, and I know they'll do a fine job for us. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft is our technical director. Mike Sola's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon. In Illinois, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms, mainly in the north. In Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy with scattered showers and isolated thunderstorms. Highs ranging from 82 near Lake Michigan to 94 in the far south. Tonight in the south, partly cloudy with a chance of isolated thunderstorms. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms. Lows ranging from 63 in northwestern Illinois to 72 in central and southern locations. The outlook for tomorrow, in the far north, becoming partly sunny. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs ranging from 75 near Lake Michigan.